Whispering
Strength. And here is Betty Davis.
Hello. The streets that lead from May to September can whisper sweet words or bitter phrases. But when Tyson Milbank met his bride at the altar, he whispered the sweetest thing that a woman can hear.
Darling, I love you.
And I love you. It won't be long now, darling. Oh, that's Naomi.
Milbank. The heck with Naomi. Darling, listen to the minister.
They were married, Tyson Milbank, age 45, and Brenda Wilson, age 25. They turned away from the clergyman. They kissed, a long, almost motion picture close-up kiss. They turned to the smattering of friends who sat in the front pews, and Naomi, Tyson's daughter, mopped her eyes and kissed her father on the lips and turned her cheek to Brenda.
Happy landing, Daddy. Good hunting, Brenda. Good hunting indeed. I got my man. You tried hard enough.
What's that, youngster?
Nothing, Daddy. Nothing at all. I brought rice to throw at you. I brought an old shoe to throw at Brenda. Oh, I'm not afraid, Naomi. I can run faster than you can throw. She who fights and runs away, you know, can live to fight another day. Well, we'd better go to the hotel for that wedding breakfast. I'm planning to get Cinco on vintage champagne.
As they drove away from their wedding breakfast, Tyson's arm was around his bride, and his voice was tender as he spoke softly. So softly that the driver couldn't hear.
There's rice in your hair. It looks like pearls.
Only to you, darling. Naomi missed me. Her aim was almost perfect, but she missed me.
Naomi said some very odd things just after the ceremony.
Yeah, didn't she?
If I thought you two girls weren't going to get along, well, it would take the edge off this moment.
Oh, nothing must take the edge off this precious moment. Naomi and I'll get along. Don't you worry.
I wonder what's wrong with the kid.
Oh, I don't wonder. I know.
Well, then give.
Well, to put it in a nutshell, she thinks I married you for your money. And to tell the truth, Ty, I did marry you for your money. I was so tired of filing, tapping those typewriter keys, taking your eternal dull dictation, that I chose the only way out.
Little dope.
I was so tired of meeting you for dinner instead of having dinner at home with you. I was so weary of saying goodnight to you in front of my boarding house instead of... Oh, Ty, I'm terribly in love with you. Do you know it?
You bet I know it.
I realized that you were married before. You've got Naomi to prove it.
Yes, I've got Naomi.
But your wife died 12 years ago, darling. You've been alone too long.
Except for Naomi.
She loves you as much as I do, Ty.
Yes, but in a different way.
In a very different way. Oh, darling, between us, we must keep you happy. We don't know each other very well now, but when we're living in the same house...
When you're living in the same house, sweetheart, you'll be firm friends. You're so near the same age.
Only 3 years difference. Let's stop talking about Naomi, darling. Let's talk about us. How happy we'll be on our honeymoon, and how happy we'll be when we come home from it, and how happy we'll be forever and ever. Oh, don't kiss me now, Ty. The chauffeur's watching us in the rearview mirror. Well, I don't care. Let him watch. His ears are turning pink, darling. So are mine.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back again. But first...
Anyway, I don't think that many people these days realize...
It's as if it's really there.
How many?
There.
Where?
There.
Where?
Okay.
Okay. But anyway...
You ought to try it. Don't put it down if you
don't
try it.
Positively.
No, I mean, it's really good for... It really opens your mind.
You know, I found out that since I was doing it...
You can get together with people and talk out the things that
That's right. Never any... Dagnet.
No, Dagnet.
Discord.
Discord. What is Discord?
Discord. You know, Discord. What Discord is.
No, not particularly
that, but
well, then what do you mean by Discord?
What do you mean by Discord?
Discord?
I don't know what you mean by Discord.
Well, Discord music.
What's a Discord?
Discord music.
Discord music.
Music.
Discord.
You know, like music.
Disharmony, for instance.
Disharmony.
I never disagree with people.
Well, like
who
all of us
think
they're talking. It's really going together.
Like, we're really not in Discord.
No.
Like in
music.
Say music.
Music.
For instance, how many people really realize today that through drugs they have found out that they can,
And now, back to our story with Betty Davis.
The Milbanks came home from 3 ecstatic weeks of honeymoon, stopping the last night in a pleasant little motel less than 10 miles from the big house to which Tyson was taking his bride. It was Brenda who suggested that they stop at the motel.
You know, I've always wanted to spend a night in a motel, and I never got the chance. Go up to the desk and register, darling. That woman at the desk looks so pleasant.
You're a crazy kid, but I'll tell you this. I've always wanted to spend a night in a motel, too. There's something sort of wonderfully illicit about it. Pardon me, but do you have a spare cabin?
No, we've just one left, sir, and it's only available for tonight. It's taken for tomorrow.
Now, we only want it for one night, but it'll be a very special night. It's the last night of our honeymoon.
No, it isn't either. Our honeymoon's going on forever and ever. And don't you think different, Mr. Milbank.
They arrived home in time for breakfast the next morning. There was no sign of Naomi, so they had their first meal in their own house alone. Directly after breakfast, Tyson told Brenda he was going to run down to the office.
But I'll be back early, darling.
Well, I won't call you during working hours. I know how you hate personal calls. But I'll be thinking about you all the time. Oh, darling, we've been together constantly for the last 3 weeks, every moment of every day and night. I'll be frighteningly lonely.
And I'll be lonely, too. It'll be hard to keep my mind on stocks and bonds. Bye, sweetheart. Take care of yourself.
I will. Here. Hold out your hand, and I'll put a kiss in the center of it. There. Now, close your hand tight so you won't lose it.
Lucky someone's driving me to town. I'd have to manage with one hand. If I were driving myself, there might be an accident.
Why, don't say such a thing. Don't tempt fate. Oh, Ty, I do love you. Now go on, or I won't be able to let you go.
Bye, darling.
That was a very pretty little scene, Brenda. Oh, hello, Naomi. You should have been an actress instead of a private secretary. The note of sincerity in your voice was almost convincing, even to me. Naomi, why are you such a... Why are you so horrid? Because I can't stand you. Because I think you're an opportunist. If Daddy'd been a middle-aged clerk, you'd never have married him. But because he was president of the company, I'd like to shake you, Naomi. Shake you till your teeth rattle. But I'm so happy that I couldn't possibly shake anyone. Sure, you're happy. You've gained your objective. Say, am I supposed to call you Mother? You certainly are not. First time I saw you in Daddy's office, I thought you were quite beautiful and extremely efficient. Well, I haven't changed my mind about you, Brenda, but I've realized that your efficiency overbalances your beauty. When I think of all the women who've been after Daddy since Mother died, of how impervious he was until you came along, I'm glad he was impervious. You'll hang on to him like grim death, Brenda. You'll never let him go. You're darn right I won't. But not for the reason you think. You must have had a bunch of younger men hanging on your coattail. Naturally, I've had younger beaux. When I started to work for your father, they didn't matter anymore. Oh, you must believe me, Naomi. Your father's money doesn't matter. I'd love him just as much if he were a rag picker.
Don't laugh like that. Please don't.
You're 20 years younger than Dad. According to the law of averages, he'll die while you're still a young woman.
Oh, you're a ghoul, Naomi. If your father dies, I'll want to die, too.
Oh, no, you won't. Dad has a tremendous insurance, and you'll look charming in black. And here endeth the lesson for the first day. I need coffee. Lots of it. Very black. Will you join me in a loving cup, Brenda?
A guerrilla warfare between two women who love the same man. But Naomi did love her father in her own way. She was utterly charming when she and Brenda and her father were a threesome. But when she and Brenda were alone, she had a fine supply of poisoned arrows, and she used them with discretion, skill, and finesse. One night when Brenda and Tyson were home alone for dinner, Brenda started to cry suddenly and violently.
Well, darling, what is it?
Oh, I guess I'm just a little nervous.
Well, what about?
Oh, nothing. Nothing. I guess too much happiness came to me all at once. I couldn't quite accept my luck.
Oh, you're going to make tears of comfort, sweetheart. But if you're not feeling well...
Oh, I'm in the pink.
Or if Naomi's been needling you...
Don't worry about Naomi.
Well, she told me just this morning when she drove me to the station that you and she were getting on like two bugs in a rug. She sounded very sincere.
Brenda refused to tell her husband that Naomi was breaking her down, slowly but surely. But you know the Bible quotation, a constant dropping weareth away stone. And Brenda was no stone. Day after day, it went on like this.
Why don't you have a baby, Brenda? Then you'll have Daddy over a barrel, and I'd love to wheel a baby up and down the street and tip over the baby carriage and land Sonny on his flat little head, or on both his heads. I wish I were going to have a baby so that my nose would be broken. Well, get this, Brenda. My nose doesn't break so easy. It's tough. You're tough, Naomi. It isn't only your nose.
I'm tougher than my parent, anyhow.
Have you noticed that Daddy's looking older every day? Well, I think your father's looking marvelous. The strain of pleasing a young woman usually gets a middle-aged man down, physically. What do you know about pleasing anybody? You...
Go on, say it.
I can't think of anything to call you that's descriptive enough.
But I can think of things to call you.
Want me to say a few of them? It's hard to believe that Daddy's only 45. Suddenly he looks 65. Oh, don't blink that way, Brenda, as if you're trying to hold back the tears. You don't have to put on an act with me.
Envy, actual hatred. Sometimes Brenda told herself that, well, although she loved her husband, she couldn't take much more of it. And then one afternoon late, when Naomi was talking away in her usual vein, the phone rang.
Do you want to answer, Brenda? It's probably my daddy saying that he's counting the minutes until he gets home to you. The minutes and the split seconds.
Most of the phone calls are for you, Naomi.
That's true. The local gentry hasn't accepted my young stepmother. You don't seem to get many invitations from our neighbors.
Hello?
Yes, this is his daughter.
What? What?
Naomi, is anything wrong with you, Brenda?
Yes? Yes, I will. What hospital?
Did you say hospital?
Oh, yes, I've got it. Yes, we'll be there as soon as possible. We'll drive in. Daddy was crossing the street against the lights with his head down. He was lost in thought. He was probably thinking about you, Brenda. He's in the Mercy Hospital. We'd better get there right away. The doctor told me that he's on the critical list.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back.
We often read that a candidate for the presidency of the United States is stumping the nation during his campaigning. But do you know how the expression originated? Actually, it was born during the early days of the West, when candidates for public office went out looking for votes. In order to be seen and heard by the crowds of people who gathered, the candidate was forced to stand on some kind of platform. And what was handier in the backwoods areas than the stump of a fallen tree? From this early open-air type of campaigning, stumping has come to mean any kind of campaigning where a candidate travels around the country to meet the people face to face. Through this method of campaigning, another page was added to your political history.
And now, back to our story with Betty Davis.
For once, they weren't quarreling as they drove into the city. Brenda huddled back in a corner of the seat. Naomi drove swiftly and recklessly. When they reached the Mercy Hospital, it was Brenda who asked for a room number. And though Naomi tried to sneer, her lips were white.
I suppose you're going up alone?
No, we'll go together. I'm his wife, but you're his daughter. He loved you first. You don't have to be beaten about it, you know.
Okay, Brenda, come on.
They went up in an elevator silently, went along a white corridor. As they reached the door of the room in which Tyson Milbank lay, perhaps dying, it opened and closed quietly, and a doctor came out. Brenda moved toward him. She put her hand on his arm.
You're in charge of the case. What I mean is, I'm Tyson Milbank's wife.
I'm his daughter.
I wish I had good news for you, but...
They told me over the phone that he was on the critical list. Is it true?
Yes, all too true. Only a miracle will save him. If he slips into a coma now, he may...
He may what?
Sleep away. But if he can be roused...
I'll rouse him.
If you do, it would be incredible. You'd better go in alone, Mrs. Milbank.
No. Both of us together. Ty. Ty, darling. He can't hear you. He looks as if he's dead already.
No, he doesn't. No.
Ty. Ty, darling, you must listen to me. Do you remember the first night of our honeymoon, Ty? Do you remember how the surf sounded? It was like a great heart beating. Do you remember how I leaned back against your shoulder and you said that my hair tickled your ear? And then, do you remember what the violin was playing, darling, inside the hotel? It was playing, "I'll Be Loving You Always." Do you remember the last night of our honeymoon in the motel and how the woman who ran the motel smiled at us as if she were remembering a dear dream? Oh, try hard. Remember. You must remember.
You remember.
We'll have a second honeymoon, Ty, as soon as you're well enough. We'll hear the surf beating like a great heart as soon as you're well enough. He's scarcely breathing. He's slipping away, Brent.
No, I won't let him slip away. I won't.
Tyson Milbank, listen to me. Open your eyes, Ty, or I'll be very angry.
He can't open his eyes.
Oh, yes, he can. Open your eyes, Ty. You must speak to me. You must promise me that you'll get well.
Naomi, the irreverent, mocking, bitter one, had slipped to her knees beside her father's bed. But Brenda, leaning across the bed, had her hands on her husband's shoulders, and she was shaking him gently as she talked.
Promise, Ty. Promise you'll get well for my sake. Promise.
I do promise.
Did he speak to you?
Yes, just now.
His pulse. It was so weak before.
His eyes have closed again? But he promised me to get well, and he won't break a promise to me.
He isn't in a coma. It's a natural sleep. Has this been some sort of a miracle for you?
You dragged him back, Brenda. Back to life from the dead. It was the only way. I had to drag him back. Oh, Naomi, come here. There. There, dear. Cry against my shoulder.
I've hated you so.
I know. And I haven't liked you very much either. But that's all over now.
Is it?
Yes. Suddenly, I realize that you're Ty's child. That his blood's in your veins. We're both a part of him, Naomi. In different ways. And oh, Naomi. I pray that sometime you'll love a man as much as I love your father. I pray that I will.
You two ladies had better go into the hall. If he waked and saw you crying, it would upset him.
Oh, yes. Yes, it would. Come on, Naomi.
Come on. The doctor? Is he still on the critical list?
No, he isn't. It's going to be a long pull, but I don't have to tell you that he's past the crisis.
Almost any problem can be solved. Almost any promise can be made and kept. Almost any barrier can be burned away. When they were driving back from their honeymoon, Brenda suggested to her husband, Tyson Milbank, that they stop overnight at a little motel. When Tyson confided to Charlotte Westerman, the proprietor, that it was the last night of their honeymoon, she smiled, as if she were remembering a honeymoon of her own.
And now here again is Betty Davis.
The motel business is an odd one, but it pays big dividends if it's charming and comfortable and well run. Charlotte Westerman's motel paid her an especially big dividend. For through it, she was able to find herself. Until then, this is Betty Davis saying goodbye from the Whispering Street.
Today's program was written by Margaret E. Sangster. Featured in the cast were Barbara Eiler, Janet Waldo, Russell Thorson, and Jack Carroll. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Your announcer is Dan Cubberly. Whispering Streets has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.